This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Amanda, devoted readers of your work in The New Yorker might not know you as a folk music aficionado. You're generally covering new artists, people coming right down the pike. And one of the artists you've been paying a lot of attention to this year is Phoebe Bridgers. You profiled her when she was releasing her second solo album called Punisher. Tell me a little bit about her. Who is she, and why is her work so interesting to you?
Phoebe Bridgers is a singer and songwriter from Los Angeles. And her work is really intimate and intense, but also sort of dark and funny. And I wanted to profile her because I think her records really speak to what it's like to be young right now, when the future seems like such a murky, almost impossible idea. Phoebe Bridgers struggles a lot in her work with this question of, how do you think about starting your life when every time you turn on the news, someone else is telling you that there's no tomorrow?
And you spoke with her in the summer at a really intense moment in the midst of the massive protests for racial justice around the country.
It's really good to see you, dude.
It's so good to see you. I know. I've missed the world, but it's nice to see you.
Yeah, likewise. I know we obviously met for the first time in New York City in late February, just shortly before the coronavirus pandemic really took hold in the U.S. And then the last time we talked, you were driving around L.A. with me on FaceTime, the first time I've ever reported a magazine profile that way. And I remember thinking that we were living through such a dramatic, kind of world-changing, once-in-a-lifetime moment. But now, somehow, we are living through another one of those moments.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. I just wanted to check in with you. Kind of, how have you been metabolizing recent events?
I've been metabolizing them with joy, I guess. Like, just white people being silenced on social media also, I think, is the best thing that has ever happened. Like, truly. it was, like, amazing to watch people struggle with that. But also great to watch people kind of adapt. I love the weird corner it's put capitalism in.
Right, yeah. And in the midst of all this, you're releasing an album.
Yeah.
which I want to talk to you about. So part of being the subject of a New Yorker profile is knowing that the writer of the profile is going to call everyone you know and say, hey, tell me about Phoebe. And so one of the people I spoke to when I was working on my piece about you was Matt Berninger, the frontman of the indie rock band The National. And he gave me this quote that I thought was sort of incredible, where he said, Phoebe writes so well about boredom and sadness. And I'm curious if you feel like that seems like a pretty true description of your work to you.
Yeah, I think so. I think I never really try to tackle giant things. I just kind of go into writing with whatever information I have in that actual moment. And a lot of the time when I'm writing something, I am bored and sad. I will use any excuse to not write. So writing is like, I have this weird guilt about how I didn't do it earlier, and I'm just kind of daring myself to write about whatever comes to mind. So I think I just kind of naturally write about boredom and sadness that way.
Yeah, it makes sense. I feel like this quarantine for me, I've tried really hard to have a kind of routine, because otherwise I think it is, you're sort of plagued by guilt nonstop.
Right.
Well, this feels like the perfect moment for you to perform Kyoto. And so this song deals with, you and I talked about this a bit, some, you know, pretty painful feelings of alienation and a failed reconciliation, in this case with your dad. Can you tell me a little about what was going on for you when you wrote it?
Kyoto is about It's a little tongue-in-cheek about my own strong opinions weakly held, you know, like just feeling super hateful and resentful and then knowing that it just dissipates with like one conversation. My inability to like predict that too. I think on the first record, there's some resentment that's just kind of like full throttle and not held back at all. And I think maybe I'm becoming a little more self-aware that it's all a little more complicated than just saying how I feel about it. If I say how I feel about it in the moment, it's just ridiculous. Like the I'm gonna kill you line is not true, luckily.
Yeah, it's a great line though.
check.
That's the only vocal warm-up that works for me, by the way. All right. I will mute you and play it.
Day off in Kyoto, I got bored at the temple, looked around at the 7-Eleven. The band took the speed train, went to the arcade. I wanted to go, but I didn't. He called me from a payphone. They still got payphones. It cost $1 a minute to tell me you're getting sober, and you wrote me a letter, but I don't have to read it. I'm gonna kill you if you don't beat me to it. Dreaming through Tokyo skies, I wanted to see the world, then I flew over the ocean, and I changed my mind. Woo.
So I've been driving out to the suburbs to park at the Goodwill and stare at the chemtrails with my little brother. He said you called on his birthday. You were off by like 10 days, but you get a few points for trying. Remember getting the truck fixed and you let us drive it. 25 felt like flying.
Amazing. Are you getting used to playing for no audience, sort of performing for a screen?
Kind of. It's hard to get used to. I hope I never get used to it, but
right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're directing a lot of energy out and probably less is coming back in. It's got to be a kind of a weird flip-flopping of the normal performance experience.
Totally. Yeah, it's very weird. Yeah, I like the main thing is like not forgetting words. I feel like I didn't realize how much of a tool I used other people for like remembering my own songs. So
you meet people in the crowd, like mouthing them back to you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wild. So I know you started playing guitar as a teenager. We talked a little bit about, you know, the guitar being a kind of rebellion against your very sweet mom who wanted you to play the piano. But I'm curious about when you started writing your own songs.
I think I wrote my first song when I was like 11, and it was called The Only Bird Flying the Other Way, which I was not. I was a private school white girl, and I thought I was so different and that nobody understood me, which is wild. So yeah, humiliating.
Aw, The Only Bird Flying the Other Way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very funny, but also kind of sweet. It's kind of tender.
Yeah.
So if there were not a pandemic going on right now, what would your life look like?
I think I'd be on tour still. Maybe I'd be in Europe. I've on purpose not looked at my canceled dates. It's like a couple weeks back, someone was like, where would you be playing? And I was like, Madison Square Garden. Like, it's just painful.
I shouldn't laugh.
Painful.
Yeah, of course. I mean, besides performing, what's your favorite part of being out on the road?
Just being, it's like summer camp. Being surrounded by my friends and feeling just, you're never as famous as you are like five blocks from the venue you're about to play. So that's fun too. Just like living in a weird simulation where I'm the most famous person is funny. Like going to a coffee shop and everyone's like, oh, we're going to the show. And then five people at a table over are like, we're going to the show. And I'm like, ha ha ha. I don't ever feel like that in my real life. So
I really can't thank you enough for doing this, Phoebe. I feel like we are quarantine bros for life.
Yes, seriously.
After these past few months.
Seriously.
And it has really been a pleasure speaking with you again.
Thanks, dude. Okay.
Close my eyes and fantasize. Three clicks and I'm home. When I get back, I'll lay around. Then I'll get up and lay back down. Romanticize a quiet life. There's no place like my room. But you had to go. Like a wave that crashed and melted on the shore. Not even the burnouts are out here anymore. And you had to go. I know, I know, I know. Out in the park we watched the sunset, talking on swing set. After a while you went quiet and I got mean. I'm always pushing you away from me, but you come back with gravity. And when I call you come home, a bird in your teeth. So I gotta go. Sirens sound, you'll hide under the floor. But I'm not gonna go down with my hometown in a tornado. I'm gonna chase it. I know, I know, I know. I gotta go now. I know, I know, I know. driving out into the sun. Let the ultraviolet cover me up when looking for a creation myth. Ended up with a pair of cracked lips, windows down, scream along to some America First rap country song, a slaughterhouse, an outlet mall, slot machines, fear of God, windows down, heater on, big bolts of lightning hanging low over the coast. Everyone's convinced it's a government drone or an alien spaceship. Either way, we're not alone. I'll find a new place to be from, a haunted house with a picket fence to float around and ghost my friends. No, I'm not afraid to disappear. The billboard says
that's Phoebe Bridgers back at her home in Los Angeles in the summer, playing I Know the End. Amanda Petrusich profiled her for the magazine, and you can find that piece at newyorker.com.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.